This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
It's lovely to see you all this afternoon, and welcome to the Friends Lounge. And we're absolutely delighted this afternoon because we have Roslyn Russell to speak to us. Roz is many things to the Friends. She is the editor of our Friends magazine. She is the editor of the Australian Federation of Friends of Museums magazine. And she is a historian and a museum specialist and has been working part-time at the museum as the curator in gallery development and more recently in public programs. So she knows a lot about this institution. Roz has been working in the area of history and museums for over 20 years, both in Australia and overseas, and is the author of several books on Australian history. In late 2005, Roz was commissioned to develop the content and interpretation for the Museum of Parliament and National Heroes Gallery of Barbados in the capital, Bridgetown. She has visited more than 10 times to learn more about its history, its people, culture, past and present. Not only has Roz been jetting around the world, I think it's Friday you go to Germany, and she's been to Iran recently, and some of those things are partly because she is the chair of the International Advisory Committee for UNESCO on the Memory of the World. So we're absolutely thrilled that Roz has been able to come today to talk to us. And some of these wonderful things here are her personal artefacts. So please welcome Roz. Thank you, Roz. Thank
you. Just get the technology happening here. Thank you, Carolyn, for your kind words and introduction. And thank you all for coming today on what's turning into a lovely day in Canberra. But it's lovelier probably, especially after our long cold winter, in Barbados. As Carolyn said, I've had more than 5 years worth of association with Barbados over the last half decade. I went there to work. I didn't know much about Barbados apart from the fact that it was a favourite holiday place for Brits and they play cricket there. But what I found out when I went there was that it was very much more than a beach, more than a holiday resort. It's a place with an enormously rich history, a fascinating culture, and wonderful people, some of whom are now amongst my closest friends. Just a bit of background. I was commissioned, as Carolyn said, to work on the interpretation of the Museum of Parliament and National Heroes Gallery in Bridgetown. I met the director of the Barbados Museum, Alessandra Cummins, who was also the president of ICOM, in China in 2005. And she said to me, "Oh, you do exhibitions. You could do one for us." And I thought, how unlikely would that be? Someone from Australia going all the way to Barbados to do exhibitions. But she asked me to apply for this particular job, and I did, and I got it, and more about that later. But right now, I just want to do a bit of recapping. I'm sure some of you probably have even been to Barbados or know a lot about it. But just for those who are not as familiar as everybody else with the place, there's a few facts and figures I'd like to talk to you about. Barbados is little. It's a small island. It looks a bit like a leg of lamb. It's located right at the edge of the Antillean chain, and that inset map there with Africa shows you that it's the closest of all the Caribbean islands to Africa. It's not much in the middle between Barbados and Africa. Here's some facts and figures. As I say, it's the easternmost island of the Lesser Antilles in the Caribbean Sea, right out beyond the major island chain that runs north to south. It has a total land area of 430 kilometres, so it's 5.5 times smaller than the ACT. It's 34 kilometres long and has a maximum breadth of 23 kilometres, but you can still get stuck in a traffic jam trying to go through Bridgetown. The highest point's Mount Hillaby, a mere 340 metres above sea level, so it's quiet, it's relatively flat. It doesn't have the high mountains, the volcanic islands such as St Lucia. 85% of the island's surface is coralline limestone. So it's not a volcanic island, it's a coral base. and 80% of the land is planted with sugar cane. And its population in 2006 was just under 280,000. So it's a pretty small place, but it has a big noise, big voice in the Caribbean, and a bit more about that later. Also a big voice in the world of tourism. Barbados is almost a byword for Brits for the place to go to for a holiday. I remember a song came out in the 80s, "In the Sun, I Will Come to See Barbados." And that was probably the only thing I knew about Barbados before I had a stronger connection with it. That's the land. This is from a slight elevation in looking over the St. George Valley towards Bridgetown and the Caribbean Sea. You see the kind of blue in the edge there. It's very green. It's very undulating, agricultural land, very productive land. The flower in the front is the, I can't say its botanical name, but it's called Pride of Barbados, and it's the national flower of Barbados. It's divided into parishes. Like all the British North American settlements, they start off with the parochial system as a basic unit of local administration and often of voting. It's the vestry was the first unit of representation in these colonies. The parishes are very distinctive. Remember how small this place is. Each parish has a distinctive accent, and it really does. We've proved it. It starts at St. Lucy in the north, goes down to Christchurch in the south, and all the other saints in between. The capital city is Bridgetown down the south. There's two other major settlements, Spitestown and Holetown. It used to be called Little England or Bimshire. It's very, very English, which sounds odd when you consider such a warm climate and such a very different sort of place. But if you look at the built environment of Barbados carries that idea, so do the people in many ways. But you just have to go around some of the parish churches in Barbados to see why it's called Little England. This could be somewhere in England.
But you said it was a coral island.
Yes.
So where did they get the stone?
Coral stone. It's coral stone, yes. St. George's Church. And if you can see that clearly, probably not, but that banner in that corner there is a Mother's Union banner. It's very much like a parish church in the UK. St. John's Church, another one of the famous coral stone churches in Barbados. And you know, the graveyard memorials. There's one there for a man who was the last of the Palaeologos line of the Christian emperors of Greece and others of various people, very much like our churchyards and churchyards in England, except of course, for the palm trees. This is the Atlantic coast. There's two coasts, the Caribbean coast and the Atlantic coast. The Atlantic coast, the sea is deeper and darker. Rougher, there's surfing there. I was standing when I took this photograph with a friend of mine, a Barbadian friend, and we looked out over the ocean, and she said, "There's nothing between here and Africa." And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. And this is very much part of the story of Barbados's early history. Its proximity to Africa in relation to some of the other Caribbean islands. This is Codrington College, one of the other part of an old plantation, but now turned to a theological college through a foundation. A very famous family, the Codrington family, owned a number of plantations in Barbados, but also some other Caribbean islands. Here's Lord Nelson in Bridgetown. He was normally standing in what used to be called Trafalgar Square. This all happened before Nelson's column in Trafalgar Square in London. So Lord Nelson was in statue form in Bridgetown before he appeared in London itself. The reason being was that Lord Nelson's, the British fleet chased the French out of the Caribbean, or at least far enough away from them not to be a problem, during the Napoleonic Wars and the Seven Years' War. And also, Nelson was a great supporter of the slave-owning interest. So the grateful planters of Barbados erected a statue in his honour. This, of course, is very, very controversial since the place has become one of black majority rule. There's been furious debates about whether they should pitch Nelson into the Careenage, which is the waterway that runs into Bridgetown. But he's still there, and they view him as part of their... This statue is part of their history too, so I think he'll probably stay there for a while. The square is now called National Heroes Square. This is the base of Barbados's wealth. Sugar and slavery were one produced by the other. Remember I said that Barbados was the closest of all the Caribbean islands to Africa? In the triangular trade where ships went from the English ports to Africa, to the Caribbean or to the ports of British North America to offload slaves, Barbados was the first place where the ships stopped and made landfall in Bridgetown. And the slave market in Bridgetown was the first place people had a chance to buy the strongest and the best looking and the most healthy slaves. Barbados was the killing fields. It was a really, really tough regime. For a long time they worked them almost to death till they realised that it was much more profitable to breed from them and actually breed a labour force. So after a while they had a native groups growing up, population of slaves growing up in Barbados, and didn't need to import so much from Africa. Although slaves continued to come from Africa well into the 19th century. There's a wonderful place called George Washington House. George Washington made his only overseas visit to Barbados, caught smallpox, survived, which made him immune to smallpox when the Continental Army copped it during the War of Independence. But he observed firsthand the slave system in Barbados, the breeding slave system. He again took this back to Virginia and adopted it there in Virginia. But when he died, he left a clause in his will to free his slaves. So just don't quite know what was going on in his conscience then, but he certainly learned some lessons in Barbados. And George Washington House has a very good display showing the system of plantation slavery and the representation of the slave market and punishments for slaves, because pain and punishment were what the slavery system was all about. Slaves were branded. This is a brand that's held in the Barbados Museum. One of the great ironies, I think, of history is that the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel owned plantations in Barbados, and people were branded with the word society, which is an extraordinarily awful thing to think about. Punishment for infringements was severe, terrible choke collars and things, balls and chains, that, you know, shackles. See that these are some artefacts still surviving and kept in the Barbados Museum collection. Work in the cane fields was really tough. It was a hard, hard life, and people worked almost to exhaustion, particularly in the tropical conditions in the cane fields. That picture here shows a man wielding what they call a cane bill, a hook that cut the cane, but it was also a tough life in the boiling houses because it was hot, and there you were stirring the molten sugar in these terribly hot conditions. Slaves lived in this kind of place. This is actually quite a substantial slave dwelling. A lot of them were less substantial than that. This is a stone-built one that's at Tyrrell Cot. A bit more about Tyrrell Cot later on, but it was the home of one of Barbados's leading politicians. Pretty basic, just a few items of earthenware on the table there. Here are two plantation great houses. One's called Bailey's Plantation on my left, your on the right-hand side of the screen, and the other is called Thickets. These places were sites of one of the great slave rebellions, because every now and again the slaves rebelled. They'd find out something, someone would be able to read, and they'd find out something about what was going on in the wider world. What was going on in the wider world was that in 1807, you'll probably remember 2 years ago or 3 years ago now, we had the abolition of the slave trade bicentenary. So the slave trade itself was outlawed, but slavery wasn't. But there's still an agitation, of course, going on to abolish slavery itself. Some of the more educated slaves read the newspapers and said, look, it's time we asserted ourselves. And at Easter 1816, there was a slave rebellion that began at Bailey's Plantation, this one here, and spread through the whole of the island, particularly down the south part of the island. It was put down with the usual severity. The West India Regiment was brought in, and I think about 300 people died, one soldier and 300 slaves and supporters. And there are a number, of course, of executions afterwards. And we'll talk a bit more later about one of the national heroes who emerged from this particular conflict. This is a picture of a sugar mill now at George Washington House, Bridgetown. And onto the story that really took me to Barbados, which was the story of their parliament. Parliament in Barbados is old. It is the third oldest parliament in the Commonwealth after Britain itself and after Bermuda. It was founded in 1639 by a group of the landed interest in Barbados, formed a parliament, and so set up representative institutions in the country. Of course, of themselves, there was absolutely no representation, need I say, of the majority of the population who were black slaves and people of colour who were maybe what they call free coloureds. People who bought their liberty or had been in other ways manumitted or released from slavery. This is a monument to the place where the first parliament was held, which is called the Sessions House. This is in Bridgetown. And this is the site of my labours. This is the west wing of the public buildings in Bridgetown, where the Museum of Parliament and National Heroes Gallery is housed. In the lower floor of that building there, with the jalousie windows sticking out, where the windows are sticking out in the sort of rounded end is the National Heroes Gallery. Museum of Parliament's a bit further along, towards the clock tower. These buildings were built in 1870, in the 1870s, completed in 1872, and were housed the government offices, the post office, things like that. The other side of the complex is Parliament itself. But the Museum of Parliament, National Heroes Gallery, is in the bottom of this building. This is from the Senate. Now, the Senate chamber in the Parliament section has the coats of arms of the speakers, people with names like Aline and Beckles, whose names are very common in Barbados today because, as you probably know, the practice was to give slaves the names of the plantation owners. So that there's many, many people called Aline and Beckles and other names of well-known plantation owners in Barbados today. Because these were the landed interests, the people who actually owned the plantations at that point. Now, the Museum of Parliament, the organising principle for this came from a statement by this man, Errol Barrow, who was at that stage Premier of Barbados. We're talking the 1960s. He was asking for or saying Barbados was ready for its independence. And what he said was, in 1639, that the English inhabitants of Barbados settled a parliament for themselves, thereby created the legislative institutions, which we have since, without any disturbance, enjoyed. So a long continuity of parliamentary institutions. And the strength and durability of our institutions are best demonstrated by the fact that representative government and the rule of law are now administered by people who are different in racial origins from those who established them. So they're incredibly proud of this long tradition that goes back to 1639 and is maintained to this day of the same parliamentary institutions as had started in the beginning are still with us today but have passed completely over to people from quite a different ethnicity. He gave that address to the Barbados Constitutional Conference in London in July 1966. By November, Barbados was independent, and Errol Barrow became the first Prime Minister of independent Barbados. So, the Museum of Parliament, this is what I was doing. I was there to work out how to tell this story and how to fit it into a fairly small space in the public buildings you saw before. First of all, we decided we'd have a timeline. Always nice to have a timeline to give people the logic of the history. And these are examples of the timeline that goes around the walls of this stone-built building. It's again built of coral stone and big, thick, heavy walls, amazingly thick walls. So we use those walls to put the linear story of Barbados around the walls of the gallery. Then there's, right at the beginning, there's key moments in Barbados' history. So you start off with the first parliament in, 1629, the establishment of the parishes, because the parishes were key to their electoral system. Then 1639, the parliament. 1652, the Charter of Barbados. And this is a very interesting story because this is a story that comes out of the British Civil War. The Commonwealth fleet, Oliver Cromwell's fleet, in fact, laid siege to Barbados. There were Roundheads and Cavaliers on the island. The two factions were opposing. They finally decided, they made a pact with the general, the admiral of the fleet. Finally, when they managed to talk them around to take the siege off, that they could have a charter establishing their liberties, which basically said they could have no taxation without representation well before the American Declaration of Independence. So it's the Charter of Barbados was a very important document in their history. Then the Confederation riots in 1876, this was a movement where the British Colonial Office tried to confederate the Windward Islands with Barbados. And the slaves thought this meant they would get the plantations. And they rioted. Again, another big disturbance. But that led to some reforms in the representation. 1937, a similar thing happened. Barbadians were very poor. They wanted trade unions to help them organise politically and economically. A trade union organiser came from Trinidad, and they tried to deport him. And there were riots then in which over 20 people were killed. But yet it also led to another commission of inquiry that began the process of achieving democratic reforms. 1946 is the Bush experiment. This was a limited experiment in self-government for Barbados. 1951, responsible government, and 1966 was independence. So this is the sort of the framework. These are the key moments that are going to be explored through this exhibition. And right at the beginning of the exhibition, we had a video of Errol Barrow saying those words you saw before about how Barbados had gone from a place ruled by one particular ethnic group to one that was now looked after by another. And we tell the story all the way through of the exhibition of this particular transition from slavery through to limited franchise, through to full franchise, through to self-government, through to independence and modern Barbados. And what our designer decided to do was not to have too many showcases. There weren't very many artefacts. There are some, but not very many. But to use this structure as a spine through the different rooms, because Barbadians are very strong on woodworking. And he thought a structure like this would, to express the woodworking talents of Barbadians was better than just maybe text panels just put up on the walls. And it worked really well. And you can incorporate, there are showcases incorporated in that as well, that where things are mounted vertically. Behind it is a model of what's called a chattel house. I'll say more about chattel houses a bit later on. They're the typical Barbadian vernacular architecture. And that's there because it's a monument to the people who were killed in 1937 in the riots, and their names are written on the chattel house wall. We use the windows at the ends of each of the rooms. There are two major rooms in the Museum of Parliament with big window embrasures at the end. And we use those windows to tell the stories of these two major disturbances that led to further reforms. And it also tells the story of independent Barbados and the achievement of independence and the swearing-in of the first Barbadian Governor-General. So that Museum of Parliament tells that whole story. It finishes off talking about the way Parliament is run in Barbados today, about how people vote, those kinds of democratic education, particularly for Barbadian school children to understand how the voting system works and things like that. Then we have almost like a tunnel that goes between Museum of Parliament and National Heroes Gallery. And we were wondering what to do with this, and we thought we had to do something to give the context to the whole story, because the hero stories start to tell similar stories, but they're individualised and personified in that next gallery. What was the context for the lives of the heroes, the lives of Barbados, for the whole of the history? Of course, it starts off with slavery. Slavery was a huge, was the big story. And we have a mural by a Barbadian artist called Omawali Stewart representing the life of slaves. And this one, the central image, shows the people working in the fields, but also people with being punished by cruel instruments of confinement that were imposed on people if they didn't behave themselves as their plantation owners would have liked. The second mural, which is not quite finished in this picture, I'm afraid, but it's nearly there, is by Coral Bernardine, and it shows emancipation. And emancipation came in 1834. All the slaves in the British Empire were freed by order of the Queen in Parliament. But there's a but. They then were bound apprentice for an indefinite period at first to their former owners. So they still had to work for a certain amount of hours a day for the plantation owners and so on. And finally, in 1838, full apprenticeship stopped and full independence came in. And there's a little behind that hand there that shows the breaking of the chains. There's a group of people, a boy with a drum, and there's a famous folk song in Barbados called Lick and Lock Up Dunwid, Hurrah for Gin Gin. And that means lick, whipping, lock up, being confined in a plantation dungeon, finished with hurrah for Gin Gin, hurrah for Queen Victoria. So, yes, the Queen come from England to set we free, hurrah for Gin Gin. And I won't sing it, I can't sing. But it's a little song that talks about this story. And that's a very famous image in Barbados of the little boy with the drum and the people following behind singing Lick and Lock Up Dunwid, hurrah for Gin Gin. So they come to the National Heroes Gallery, and we took a different approach in this gallery entirely. The first gallery tells the story in a fairly traditional way with text panels, artefacts, the usual things that museums do. The National Heroes Gallery took a different approach. We invited 10 Barbadian artists to come and apply to create icons, represent non-realistic representations of each of the 10 National Heroes of Barbados. And I won't go through all the names because they won't be familiar to you, but I'll talk about a few of them in a minute. There are 10 National Heroes, and they were proclaimed in 1998 on what became National Heroes Day, which is at the end of April every year. And the man who did the announcement was Chief Justice Sir David Simmons, and the banners around the place pull extracts from David Simmons' speech to explain what the National Heroes Gallery is about. And this one is one that covers the whole gallery, talking about the debt that Barbadians owe to the National Heroes, the great legacy of the many who have taken Barbados from the large field of plantations to a modern society, from slavery to democracy, from serfdom to suffrage. And the room is further divided into four themes that the National Heroes fit into: faith and freedom, democracy, social justice and excellence. And there's two or three grouped into most of these, with one exception, and that is Sir Garfield Sobers, who is the sole representative of excellence because of his giving prowess. And each of them have another quote from each of these banners for these themes have another quote from Sir David Simmons' speech. So I'll just talk about a few of the heroes very quickly. Bussa was the hero of the 1816 slave revolt. You saw the picture of Bailey's plantation earlier. This is a stone, that memorial stone, has been unveiled at Bailey's plantation, talking about the 1860s riots and the slave uprising led by Bussa. Bussa was actually an African. They were still importing some African slaves even into the 19th century. This is quite late, of course, in the slavery period. And these people got together and they decided to have a rebellion. And a Negro woman called Nanny Grigg encouraged them and said, "They're all damn fools to work. For that she would not, as freedom, they were sure to. I can't read it. Sure to get the only way to get it was to fight for it. Otherwise, they wouldn't get it." So she was a bit of a stirrer, Nanny Grigg, and she encouraged the men to set forth on this ultimately ill-fated rebellion because they were crushed. But it started the ball rolling and started the whole sort of process of rebellion and disenchantment, and certainly expression. Bassa is, we don't know what he looked like. He was an African slave. There's been various representations of him. The most famous of them is a sculpture by Barbadian sculptor Carl Brudhagen in just outside of Bridgetown. And it's a picture of a, sorry, a sculpture of a slave breaking his chains. And it's called Emancipation. It's called the Emancipation Sculpture. But everybody calls it Bassa. And one of my friends, on the night that President Obama was elected, went out at 3 o'clock in the morning and put a sign on the Bassa statue. Obama plus hope. Says everything about the way that his election was responded to by black people across the world. Bailey's Plantation, again, the site of the Bassa Rebellion. Another lady who fought the slave system was Sarah Ann Gill, the only woman amongst the 10 heroes of Barbados. She was a Methodist. Methodists were unpopular, to say the least, in Barbados because they were seen as being anti-slavery. And she held that they burnt the churches down. She held services in her house. The house was attacked. She was a real heroine. The missionaries took off, of course, understandably, but she persuaded one to come back and said, "I'm staying here. I'm here. You should come back." And he did. And she's honoured as the only woman national hero for her stance against slavery and again in the defence of the Methodist faith in Barbados. This is from her tombstone in James Street Church in Bridgetown. Clement Paine, he's the man I talked to about before with the 1937 riots, the man who came from Trinidad, who had Barbadian parents, but he was deported on the pretext that he wasn't born in Barbados. His deportation led to huge riots, as I said, where people were killed. He spoke to the people, though, in Golden Square, which is this place here in Bridgetown, and there is a monument there to him, and he is also one of the national heroes of Barbados. There's one of the sculptures. This is the sculptor, Don Small, just putting the finishing touches to his sculpture, his iconic sculpture for Clement Paine, which shows an opening door to represent the way that Clement Paine's actions opened the door in Barbados to political reform. And there's a little detail of people listening to Clement Paine speaking. So Grantley Adams, a huge figure in Barbados. When you fly into Barbados, you fly into the Grantley Adams International Airport. He's an enormous figure. He was a lawyer and a politician, founder of the Barbados Labour Party, and the first Premier of Barbados, and the first and only Prime Minister of the West Indies Federation. And that little flag, I don't know if you can see it very well, but the flag behind the bust, a red sort of orange circle with wavy blue and white, and that is the flag of the short-lived West Indies Federation. This was a federation of the Anglophone countries of the Caribbean. It was established in 1958, and it was based in Jamaica, but, of course, it had a Barbadian as its prime minister. It didn't last. It was pretty hard to put together all those islands. Think of how hard it is to run our federation. We all live on them, pretty much, apart from Tasmania, on the same landmass. Here's a whole bunch of islands that are quite widely separated by sea. But what ensued from the West Indies Federation was CARICOM, which is an economic union of the Caribbean. So there was a result. But Sir Grantley Adams was the first Prime Minister of, and only Prime Minister of the West Indies Federation. As I say, he was an enormous figure in Barbados and very, very much venerated. This is his study at his home, Tyrrell Cot, which is not far from Bridgetown, and it's a National Trust of Barbados property. You can go there today. It's a fascinating place to visit because it's a complete mix of a cultivated English gentleman. He studied in England, I think he studied at Oxford, and he has wonderful library, he has wonderful English china, but also on the same table there's African artefacts. It's a really interesting place to visit and a very elegant home. This is a bit of a contrast. Martineau House is where one of the places where the Barbados Labour Party was formed under Grantley Adams' direction, and that's Tyrrell Cot on the other side of the screen, the outside of it. And in the grounds of Tyrrell Cot is a chattel house village, and I said I'd mention what chattel houses were. Chattel houses were the houses owned by slaves. They're what we'd call, you know, portables. You built a little timber house, you put it on some coral stone blocks, just sat it on it, and when you needed to move to another plantation or whatever, you just picked it up and you took it and you plonked it down on some more coral stone blocks in your next destination. Now, of course, they don't move them around much anymore. And they're very, very, very adaptable. You can add on. So you get off a lot of chattel houses that have two or three or four gables as they add on a bit more when they get a bit more money. Some of them have lovely barge boards and trim, like the one over in the right-hand side there. Quite elaborate, some quite elaborate chattel houses, but they're much-loved architectural form in Barbados, but, of course, being replaced now by modern housing.
How were they moved?
I don't know. I don't know how they did it, but I think they just took them apart and then just rebuilt them.
Thank you.
But they certainly did move them. And now they never had proper foundations. They just, you could probably pull the walls apart and move them across that way. There's still plenty of chattel houses in Barbados, but there's also a lot of modern development now, of course, needless to say. Of course, one of the great heroes of Barbados is Sir Garfield Sobers. And this is the cricket story. I mean, because cricket in Barbados are almost seamless. It's a great cricketing nation. The Cricket World Cup was held there a few years ago in Kensington Stadium. Sir Garfield Sobers was the chief among many great cricketers who emerged from Barbados, people like the three Ws, Sir Clyde Walcott, Sir Frank Worrell and Sir Everton Weeks, who all made their debut at Lord's together in 1948. And were a huge influence on bringing West Indies cricket to world prominence. They came out to Australia and played here and were absolutely, people were tremendously fond of them. They had a huge reception in Australia. Then, of course, Sir Garfield Sobers is, anyone who knows anything about cricket knows about this great all-rounder, Sir Garfield Sobers, who is a legend in the cricketing world. He, in fact, captained the South Australian cricket team at one stage and married an Australian and was knighted by Her Majesty the Queen at the Garrison Savannah in 1974 after he left competitive cricket in 1974. And he is the only national hero who is still with us today, but he's still a voice in cricket, of course, in the West Indies. And, of course, since then there's been others, people like Gordon Greenidge and Desmond Haynes and people like that who still keep the Barbadian flag flying in terms of cricket in the West Indies and in the world. So it's a place where cricket is, I mean, it's a very religious place. It's full of churches, this particular island, but cricket is another religion in Barbados. And if you go to Barbados, you've got to brush up your cricket. I very quickly learned to read the cricket news when I was going there so I could actually talk intelligently to my Barbadian friends because they expected you to know what was going on in the cricket. These pictures show Garfield Sobers' childhood home. It's been renovated quite a lot. His story is, of course, a very typical one for a Caribbean cricketer. He grew up in a fairly poor area called the Bayland. The Bayland is the area around Carlisle Bay, just in Bridgetown. And the street called Bay Street runs along it, and the Bayland is just behind that. And he got his start in life by having cricket coaching and playing cricket at the Police Boys Club. That's right on the edge of Carlisle Bay in the Bayland. So he was a role model for many, many young Barbadians, that you could come from a poor background and by achieving excellence in cricket, you could really make your mark in the world and make your nation proud of you. And are they proud? They're incredibly proud of Gary Sobers. This is the sculpture done by a sculptor in Barbados, Wayne Ongpra Wells, for the National Heroes Gallery. Again, not representational, a sort of abstracted version of a cricketer hitting a cricket ball. And this is a picture of the opening night of the Museum of Parliament and National Heroes Gallery in November 2006. It was a beautiful night in Barbados. All the buildings are illuminated as they are every Independence Day at the end of November. And the Barbados band, police band, played up outside Parliament, and the Prime Minister opened the National Heroes Gallery and Museum of Parliament of Barbados that night. It had been a wild ride for that year, because I started on the 3rd of January that year. I landed in Barbados. This is the 30th of November. So it was quite interesting, little passage, that one. But it was a wonderful occasion, and certainly the lovely Barbadian night and the illuminations really enhanced the scenery, and as did the police band, who were very good. Just a bit of a look around the place now. We've looked at the history and a bit of how it was interpreted. This is Bridgetown. This is the principal town in Barbados, currently under examination, I believe, for World Heritage status. Haven't heard any that the result of that has been just yet, but that I certainly know that the denomination has gone into the World Heritage people. This is the Carenage. This is the waterway that comes into Bridgetown off Carlisle Bay, some warehouses, and of course a lot of shipping. Barbados, of course, is a place where people go on holidays. It's not just a place of history, it's a place where people take deep sea fishing holidays and snorkeling holidays and all sorts of water related activities, messing about in boats. That's a picture of the Parliament building. That's the public building with Museum of Parliament on that side with the clock tower, and Parliament on the other side of that courtyard. This is the Independence Arch. Speaks for itself. It was erected after Barbados became independent in 1966. And it's just opposite across the Carenage from Parliament. There's a bit of vernacular life. Just behind Parliament is the old City Bar and the fruit market, so you can walk out of the august surroundings of Parliament straight into the sort of the life of the people of Barbados, buying their fruit and veg, going to the rum shop, that kind of thing. And this is a synagogue, Nidei Israel Synagogue. This is a fascinating place. It's one of the oldest synagogues in the New World. The story is that Jewish people from Brazil, from Recife, fleeing the Portuguese Inquisition, that's how far back it goes, fled from Brazil to Barbados and brought with them the technology for efficient sugar milk, sugar cane production, sugar production. And there's been a Jewish community, a Sephardic Jewish community in Barbados, was there for quite a long time. Then gradually it died out. They had a burial ground there. There's a very interesting Australian link with this community. Many of you will have heard of Sir Moses Montefiore, a very famous Victorian Jewish philanthropist and financier. Part of his family lived in Barbados and were part of this Sephardic community. And one of them was named Eliezer Montefiore. And Eliezer Montefiore came from Barbados to Adelaide to join a family business. He then went to Melbourne, where he was assisted Sir Edmund Barry with the foundation of the State Library, what was in the National Library of Victoria and the museum and the gallery. Then went to Sydney, where he was the second director of the Art Gallery of New South Wales. So from this place here, this passage out here, and he became a cult leader of culture in Australia. So it's a very interesting little link, and it's not the only one we've had with Barbados. But this is lovely. It's a wonderful old synagogue. There's a fabulous museum next to it, which is beautifully done. If you ever go to Barbados, I really recommend you look at the Nidei Israel Museum. It's a beautiful little museum. It's a gem. This is the Garrison Savannah. This is where the troops used to parade in the days of the British Empire. And it's a wonderful ensemble of Caribbean Georgian architecture. The tower over there is the main guard of the garrison. Back this way, it's a lot more of the garrison. It now houses the Barbados Defence Force. These are more buildings around the Garrison Savannah. That will one day be the National Gallery, we hope. And that building there is George, the yellow one is George Washington House, which has been beautifully restored by an American foundation and with the help of the Barbadian authorities and government as well. Also well worth a visit. And this is the Barbados Museum and Historical Society, and it's housed in the old military prison that was on the garrison Savannah. It's built four square around beautiful courtyards, very, very solid. It's actually brick built and coral stone, but it's a lovely building. And here's a few of the exhibits. This one here with the hammock, this is an exhibit on the Amerindian people who originally inhabited Barbados. There were none there at all when the first settlers arrived in 1627. But there are excavations and there are historic archaeological sites associated with the Amerindian people. That object on the right-hand side from me, or left-hand side from me, is what's called a monkey. And a monkey is a Barbadian water jar. And it's the sort of nature of the clay keeps the water very, very cold. And they say the best water comes out of a monkey. And I have a little model monkey there in one of those showcases. And there's a model of a Bajan bus. People used to get in these open-sided buses and jostle around the island's roads until fairly recently. And there's one of those famous Bellarmine jugs that were often exported from the Low Countries. And there's an African gallery because Barbados understands that people's origins are not... They are Barbadian. They're very strongly Barbadian, but they are African. Their roots are in Africa. Africa is the mother country. And they have a wonderful gallery, fairly new, I think only about 5 or 6 years old now, that explores the African background to the majority of Barbadians. That's a lovely textile, and that's a couple of carnival costumes. One of them, the one that's mostly red, is I think comes from Nigeria, and the one with the sort of raggedy bits is what it evolved into in Barbados as as the culture diversified. There's a dripstone water filter, another water ring filtering device there where it purifies the water from the top to the bottom, and some, you know, usual carts and things on the other side. Barbados has an annual cultural festival. Like most Caribbean islands, they have a carnival. I mean, this isn't a carnival for the before Lent, as it is in some of the Catholic countries of South America. This one's crop over. This is when all the crops gathered in, they have a festival. And it's held all through sort of June and July, with a culmination on the first weekend in August. It's a national holiday. These are people, revelers. They get dressed up in all these skimpy costumes. They dance, they parade around the National Stadium, and then they go out onto what's called Spring Garden Highway, and then culminate about a kilometre or two up further up the road. The grand finale of Crop Over is Grand Cadument, and Grand Cadument is a real spectacle, as you can see that all these different bands, and there's a band competition, but also they're surrounded by all these revelers in amazing costumes. Some of them are quite extraordinary. And there's a gentleman there all painted up as a lion. So you see some interesting things at Grand Cadument. It's a really authentic holiday in Barbados. And there's another Australian connection just to bring us up to the near past. I came across, through the agency of my colleague and friend Alessandra Cummins, the former home of a man called Frank Rickwood, who was a former BP executive who actually was the person who gave rise to the term that you may remember, the quiet achiever. Probably BP being under a bit of a cloud these days, I think probably that's not something you'd think about, but if you remember that slogan BP used to use, the quiet achiever, well, Frank Rickwood was the quiet achiever, apparently, the originator of that term. He was explored for oil in New Guinea. He helped to build the Alaska pipeline, lived for a long time in New York, but also lived in Sydney for quite a long time. He retired to Barbados and had a property in the north of the island. And had a lovely home, wonderful artworks, things like that. But the biggest revelation to me was going out into the outbuildings. This is one of them, the old stables of Frank Rickwood's property in Barbados, and discovering a most amazing Melanesian collection. Here we are on the other side of the world, 2 days at least flight from PNG, and here are Azmat Bispols, Malungan masks from New Ireland, and a whole range of other New Guinean artefacts that he'd collected. It's a lovely collection and an extraordinary thing to see in Barbados and be shown over by his family, who are all Australians. So it was one of those Australian moments where you meet up with people on the other side of the world. But to have this collection there, to see that in that context was quite extraordinary. Finally, before I bore you to tears, what you've all come to see, the beach. This is Dover Beach. The name gives you away all the story of the little England again, doesn't it? People having a holiday in the sun in Barbados. This is the sort of street store where you can buy things. And I bought this lovely scarf at that store, just on the beach at Palm Beach, they call it. Just a bit of sunset over the sea. This is what they call the soup bowl up on the Atlantic coast in St John Parish. This is a surfing spot where people come to surf in this part of the world. And there's these stone formations, a bit like what used to be the 12 Apostles, until several of them have fallen down at Port Campbell. Similar sort of stone monoliths in the sea, just off the beach there at that particular location. This is the boardwalk that runs from Accra Beach for a couple of kilometres. Fabulous thing, wonderful thing to go for a walk on, just to sort of see the Caribbean Sea coming in and watch the wildlife, the little crabs running around and the birds and things like that. If you're lucky, you see a hummingbird. That's a great treat. It's an enormous treat to see hummingbirds. And sunset over the Caribbean Sea.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.